Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. I hope you all had a great weekend. Today we open our show with some top national news from Public News Service, including a threat by President Trump to lodge a complaint against fired FBI Director James Comey for leaking memos, and a finding by the special counsel that Trump's social media director has broken the law. In local news, hear about a lawsuit filed by the dethroned winner of the Miss Middle Eastern Beauty Pageant against El Cajon Councilman Ben Colosio, whose organization runs the pageant. The suit alleges fraud and retaliation, including faked nude photos, allegations that Colosio has denied. But it's not the first time that he's faced fraud accusations. The Justice Department has arrested several men, including former Homeland Security officials, for scamming immigrants out of large sums of money, including here in our region, and we'll have details on today's show. On our Capitol Report, we'll have the latest on a newly elected congressman who's pled guilty to assaulting a reporter, and the controversial remarks made by a local congressman on attacking members of the media. Next up, learn who's been appointed to serve on the Grossmont Union High School District's Citizen Bond Oversight Committee and why some Alpine residents are unhappy over that agreement. Hear why the county grand jury is recommending closure of Camp Barrett, a juvenile detention center in rural East County. Plus, find out about new funding available from the county and city of San Diego to help provide drug treatment to people who are arrested with substance abuse issues. Opponents of Congressman Duncan Hunter are finding new ways to get their message out, from billboards to protests involving chicken suits and rabbit ears. Hear details on today's show. A new bill in the state legislature would enable independent investigations of controversial law enforcement shootings, and we'll have reactions from a local civil rights leader to the measure advancing in Sacramento. On Crime Beat, get details on hit-and-run drivers sought by the California Highway Patrol for hitting a pedestrian on Interstate 8 in Lakeside and then fleeing the scene earlier this month. The woman is fighting for her life in a local hospital, and a witness has provided some key details. On our sports report, get an update on the Aztecs season finale. And then on Green Scene, find out how you can help count sheep. No, not the kind you count when you go to sleep. Bighorn sheep in the annual Desert Bighorn Count coming up in the Anza Borrego Desert State Park. From Public News Service, we'll have a report about states stepping up pressure to stop efforts by the Trump administration to erode protections for state monuments, including some in California. And from County News Service, we'll take you on a road trip to the old Campo Stone store, where you'll hear about this landmark site's colorful history. We also have an alert for motorists about the continued closure of Highway 78 in our mountain areas due to repairs. And hear about a new Steve Fisher Coach of the Year award in honor of San Diego State's longtime basketball coach. Plus, find out why dogs and cats in El Cajon will soon have something to howl about, or should we say, a new animal shelter that's the cat's meow. We'll have all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
An attorney for President Trump is going to file a complaint over former FBI Director James Comey's leaked memos. Ruling from the U.S. Office of Special Counsel is that President Trump's social media director broke a federal law. In the news, an outside lawyer for President Trump will reportedly file a complaint over former FBI Director James Comey's leaked memos. In a Senate hearing this week, Comey talked about taking meticulous notes about private talks with the president in the weeks before he was fired. Comey said he asked a friend to share the content with a reporter. The U.S. Office of Special Counsel says President Trump's social media director broke a federal law. The office sent Dan Scavino a letter this week warning him of the Hatch Act, a law that bans government officials from using their power and authority to influence elections. Officials said that Scavino violated the act by calling for Trump supporters to beat a Republican congressman at the polls on his personal Twitter account in April. The special counsel says any similar actions will be considered, quote, a willful and knowing violation of the law. Well, the ratings are in for former FBI Director James Comey's eagerly anticipated Capitol Hill hearing. More than 19 million people tuned in to watch Comey testify this week. It's about 10 million less than the viewership for President Trump's inauguration. ABC had the most viewers, followed by CBS, Fox, CNN, and NBC. 13 states are mounting a court challenge to any effort by the Trump administration to roll back federal emission standards for cars and trucks. The Attorney General of New York and a dozen other top state law enforcement officials said they will vigorously pursue legal remedies to block the action. The group notified the EPA of its intent by letter. President Trump ordered a review of the Obama administration fuel standards in March, saying they were too hard on the auto industry. You're up to date. I'm Veronica Carter for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org. An attorney for President Trump is going to file a complaint over former FBI Director James Comey's leaked memos. Ruling from the U.S. Office of Special Counsel is that President Trump's social media director broke a federal law. In the news, an outside lawyer for President Trump will reportedly file a complaint over former FBI Director James Comey's leaked memos. In a Senate hearing this week, Comey talked about taking meticulous notes about private talks with the president in the weeks before he was fired. Comey said he asked a friend to share the content with a reporter. The U.S. Office of Special Counsel says President Trump's social media director broke a federal law. The office sent Dan Scavino a letter this week warning him of the Hatch Act, a law that bans government officials from using their power and authority to influence elections. Officials said that Scavino violated the act by calling for Trump supporters to beat a Republican congressman at the polls on his personal Twitter account in April. The special counsel says any similar actions will be considered, quote, a willful and knowing violation of the law. Well, the ratings are in for former FBI Director James Comey's eagerly anticipated Capitol Hill hearing. More than 19 million people tuned in to watch Comey testify this week. It's about 10 million less than the viewership for President Trump's inauguration. ABC had the most viewers, followed by CBS, Fox, CNN, and NBC. 13 states are mounting a court challenge to any effort by the Trump administration to roll back federal emission standards for cars and trucks. The Attorney General of New York and a dozen other top state law enforcement officials said they will vigorously pursue legal remedies to block the action. The group notified the EPA of its intent by letter. President Trump ordered a review of the Obama administration fuel standards in March, saying they were too hard on the auto industry. You're up to date. I'm Veronica Carter for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Three suspects have been arrested for impersonating Homeland Security officers and trying to scam immigrants out of large sums of money in exchange for legal immigration documents that they never provided. Two of the scam artists were ex-employees of Homeland Security who had not worked there for several years. They stole an estimated $6 million from over 150 victims through this scheme, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Diego. The suspects are accused of scamming victims across the U.S., including in California as well as in Mexico. One of the suspects is Hardev Panesar, a 69-year-old man from El Cajon. The others are Rafael Hasty from Tijuana, Mexico, and Gurdev Singh from Bakersfield. Charges against them include conspiring and committing wire fraud as well as impersonating an officer of the United States. If convicted, the defendants could face decades in federal prison as well as fines of up to $250,000 apiece for several of the charges. The Justice Department asked anyone who may have been victimized by this crime to notify the FBI's San Diego office. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. Congressman Duncan Hunter is stirring up controversy once again. Asked by Capitol reporters what he thought about Montana congressional candidate Greg Gianforte body slamming a reporter, Hunter said that's not appropriate behavior, but then he clarified, unless the reporter deserved it, The Hill reports. Gianforte was charged with assault against a reporter from the Guardian newspaper who asked his views on a Congressional Budget Office report on the Republican health care bill. The violent assault was caught on tape by Guardian reporter Ben Jacobs. On tape, Gianforte can be heard shouting at Jacobs after smashing him violently to the ground. The attack was also witnessed by a Fox News crew who confirmed that Gianforte grabbed Jacobs by the neck with both hands and slammed him into the ground, then began punching him and broke the reporter's glasses. The Fox News crew confirmed that the reporter did not act aggressively, did not touch Gianforte, and did nothing wrong. He merely did his job, asking the congressional candidate an important question on the eve of a special election to fill a vacancy in the House. Three newspapers revoked their endorsements of Gianforte over the brutal incident, though he managed to win his special election the next day to fill a vacancy in Congress. And he since pled guilty and agreed to pay $50,000 to an organization that protects reporters' rights. The Society of Professional Journalists denounced the assault, saying it is never acceptable to physically harm or arrest a journalist who is simply trying to do his or her job. The troubling incident was the latest in a string of offensive actions toward journalists by members of Congress and the Trump administration. A reporter from Public News Service was arrested for trying to ask a question about health care of Trump's Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tom Price, on public property in the West Virginia state capitol. San Diego Congressman Daryl Issa flipped off a Politico reporter with his middle finger when she asked his views on the firing of FBI Director James Comey, 10 News reported. Trump reportedly tried to get fired FBI Director James Comey to put journalists in prison who published leaked materials. Trump has also referred to media as enemies of the people, despite the fact that journalism is the only profession protected by the U.S. Constitution in the First Amendment. That's because our founding fathers understood the importance of a free press to protect our democracy. Journalist Joss Wolf, who once spent 226 days in prison to protect his sources after he refused to hand over videotape of a protest, had this to say about the recent bullying of the press. Now Trump has declared war on the media, and it would be naive to do anything other than strap on the gloves and prepare for a fight. The press, of course, is fighting for your rights, the public's right to know what your government officials are thinking and doing. When government officials or candidates dodge questions, bully or assault members of the media, they are also attacking your access to important information. Gianforte's attack was a thuggish display of cowardice by an elected official who punched out a reporter rather than answer a reasonable question about the nonpartisan congressional budget report. That report found that the Republican health care plan would cause 23 million people to lose health care and result in some low-income seniors paying up to 850% more for health insurance premiums. As members of the media, we would like to remind Congressman Hunter that no reporter ever deserves to be assaulted for asking tough questions, just as no member of Congress deserves to be assaulted merely because someone doesn't like what they say or do. Journalists should not have to don body armor in order to fight for your right to know the views of the people you've elected to represent you, or the candidates who are seeking your votes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Getz with an education report. The Grossmont Union High School District has appointed Lou Russo to its Citizens Bond Oversight Committee. Russo says he will bring an Alpine perspective to the bond oversight process, but critics in Alpine contend that Russo does not reflect the views of many Alpine residents on bond issues related to the long-sought Alpine High School. Russo ran unsuccessfully three times for the Alpine Union School District's board. He currently serves on the Alpine Community Planning Group and is a previous Rural Fire Protection District board member. In his 2014 campaign, he described his qualifications as including experience in military, public school, and corporate education and training, with background as a retired U.S. Marine Corps Provost Marshal. Grossmont confirmed that Russo will serve a 2-year term on the committee, which is tasked with oversight for compliance with Proposition U and Measure BB, which raised funds for upgrading school facilities. Proposition U also was intended to create a local high school for Alpine and Blossom Valley. However, Grossmont has not built the school, citing a variety of reasons, including a recession that lowered property tax funding. Frustrated parents have sought to have the Alpine Union School District build the high school that Grossmont has refused to build. The Alpine District and Alpine taxpayers are suing Grossmont, also seeking permission from the state to split up the Grossmont District. The suit asks Grossmont to turn over bond monies raised for the high school. as a grand jury report advised Grossmont to do, yet Grossmont defied the grand jury recommendation. Russo won the position over two other candidates, Odai Yosef, a San Diego State student who ran unsuccessfully for the Grossmont board in 2016, and Carla Slater-Ketrick, a data manager, ministry assistant, and clinic coordinator at Foothills United Methodist Church. Russo did not respond to phone calls or an email from East County Magazine regarding his views on current legal battles over the Alpine High School or about Alpine's proposed unification. However, in his 2014 AUSD board campaign statement, published on Alpine Community Network, he stated, "I have always supported a high school for Alpine." But Bill Weaver, former chairman of Alpine's High School Citizens Committee, told East County Magazine that his experience since 2005 leads him to believe that Russo is not going to help Alpine in any way to get its promised high school. Weaver said Russo attended only a very small number of the group's meetings and was, quote, more of an antagonist than a proponent of the effort to create the school for Alpine. George Barnett, who serves on the planning group with Russo, stated in a news release that while it's appropriate to have an Alpine resident on the board oversight committee, Russo has been vocal in public forums opposing spending money on the lawsuit against Grossmont, saying Alpine School District would be better off to spend that money in other ways. Barnett asked Russo to publicly comment on working forcefully on the Citizens Bond Oversight Committee to represent Alpine's right to its own high school now, but Russo has not made any such commitment. Barnett and Russo have butted heads over planning group issues in the past, for example, over application of the Brown Act, which lays down rules for public meetings. Russo's communication style at planning group meetings came under fire in a story by the San Diego Union-Tribune in 2011. The Citizens Bond Oversight Committee has previously been the subject of controversy when Nick Marinovich resigned his position, contending the committee acted, quote, like a lapdog, not a watchdog, failing in its oversight duties. The Bond Oversight Committee is supposed to scrutinize audit reports, planning documents, visit school campuses, and take other steps to make sure that the district is using bond dollars responsibly. As of late April, Alpine Union School District has spent over $758,000 on the legal case, while Grossmont has spent over $3.2 million. Grossmont is using bond money to pay for its legal defense. Another issue raised by proponents of the Alpine School is why GUHSD developed site plans for the school, sent them to the state architect in 2012, then asked for the plans to be returned and did not proceed with construction. In addition to the lawsuit, Alpine Union School District is seeking district unification through the State Board of Education to expand from elementary and middle schools in order to build a high school. That issue may go before the board in June. Russo, in his unsuccessful school board campaign in 2014, said he would only support unification if it was the only way for Alpine to achieve its goals and did not adversely affect the elementary district and the Alpine community.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A report by the San Diego County Grand Jury proposes that the county consolidate juvenile detention facilities and consider closing Camp Barrett, which is located near Descanso, 35 miles from San Diego. Grand jury members toured the county's Kearney Mesa, East Mesa, and Camp Barrett juvenile detention facilities. The jury members found two facilities in need of major repairs and greatly underutilized. Camp Barrett houses high-risk boys ages 13 to 18, offering an incentive-based reward system to help the young men learn to modify their behavior. A running club at the camp has shown encouraging results, and the facility also has a vegetable garden where the boys grow their own foods. An education curriculum follows the University of California guidelines and includes transition and pre-release meetings. The camp also offers culinary arts, horticultural skills, auto repair and maintenance, and barista training classes. Overall, Camp Bear has a recidivism rate of 29%, meaning 71% do not reoffend. A troubling finding was that although boys with severe mental illness are not housed at Camp Baird, nevertheless 25% of the juveniles there are on psychotropic medications for conditions such as anxiety, depression, or attention deficit disorder. The report also found classrooms and dormitories in the aging facility that were substandard and in need of major repairs. The remote location also makes it difficult for families to visit. An earlier grand jury report a year earlier had recommended that a long-range master plan be created to determine feasibility and advisability of consolidating juvenile detention facilities. The county asked for more time to create that plan, but as of April, the probation department still has not done so. In August 2015, another juvenile facility, Juvenile Ranch, was closed. Its detainees were relocated to the remaining three facilities. Despite this action, however, the total cost for all three facilities increased by $1.6 million instead of decreasing. That's because employees were transferred to the remaining facilities, increasing the staff-to-detainee ratio. With only 85 detainees at the time, grand jurors visited, the facility at Camp Barrett was 55% underutilized, the report found. The grand jury members praised staff at Camp Barrett as dedicated and upbeat, adding that detainees interviewed were optimistic about success once released. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jordan Damon.
The Otay Water District has filed a lawsuit against the City of San Diego alleging breach of contract, overcharges on recycled water rates, and lack of transparency. The district represents Spring Valley, Jamul, Otay, and other portions of southeast San Diego County. Otay accuses San Diego of becoming unjustly enriched at Otay's expense, according to Mark Roback, president of the Otay Water District. The suit asks the Superior Court to rescind a January 2016 rate hike and make San Diego repay to the district $16 million in overcharges. In November 2015, San Diego more than doubled the rates on reclaimed water to pay for expansion of reclaimed water services to its customers in the North City area. The rate hike included customers who get water from the South City Water Plant, where 99% of Otay's water comes from, even though Otay customers won't benefit from the upgrades for the North City Plant. Otay objected in writing and in oral testimony during the city's rate-setting process. Otay argues that the jacked-up rates violate the California Constitution, as well as Otay's 2003 agreement with the city. Now, by law, the city is not allowed to charge Otay any more than the reasonable cost of providing water from the South Bay facility to Otay, the suit contends. Roback says the city should have adopted a separate zoned rate for its southern service area. In addition, Otay claims the city has failed to provide a proper accounting of how San Diego used another $3.6 million in fees for reserved capacity in the South Bay plant and transmission facilities. The suit argues that the city used Otay's facilities over the amount allowed in the 2003 agreement without paying for that extra use. Otay is not the only agency balking at recent hefty rate hikes imposed by San Diego for reclaimed water. Objections have also been raised by Lemon Grove and other jurisdictions. Rising water rates have drawn objections across our region following years of drought and costly efforts to boost local storage capacity and recycling of water. Two incumbents on the Helix Water District Board lost their seats in 2016 amid a veritable ratepayer revolt over a five-year rate hike imposed. Padre Dam Municipal Water District is currently drawing fire from some ratepayers over its proposed rate hike, despite having rates higher than most cities in the nation, though it also has no outside water supplies to rely on. At a recent El Cajon City Council meeting, Maureen Stapleton, general manager of the San Diego Water Authority, gave a slideshow presentation and accused the Metropolitan Water District in Los Angeles, which supplies much of our region's water, of squandering funds by buying five islands in the Delta region without an appraisal or a clear understanding of why such expenditure was necessary, a revelation that El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells called shocking. Water districts have found themselves in a catch-22 situation, however, encouraging consumers to use less water in order to conserve precious water resources during the drought. But when ratepayers complied with requests and used less water, that meant lower revenues for water districts. Since water lines still need to be maintained and repaired, water districts have argued that they have no choice but to raise rates or risk serious infrastructure breaks or potentially fiscal insolvency. Boosting water supply, either through new storage or buying recycled water, also increases costs for a water district. A May 25th report in Voice of San Diego indicated that San Diegans on average are paying double the national average on their monthly water bills. Paying such large bills is especially challenging for residents in our region, which also has among the highest electricity rates and the highest housing costs in the nation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The county and city of San Diego will receive $6 million to provide substance abuse and mental health services to hundreds of people who are cited or charged with misdemeanor drug and property crimes across the region. The Board of State and Community Corrections voted to award the grant after ranking the county and city's joint proposal first among dozens of entries. Proposition 47, which was passed by voters in 2014, changed certain drug and property offenses from felonies to misdemeanors. It also required the state to redirect savings from a reduced prison population to this grant program to help those cited or arrested for certain misdemeanors. This is the first time grants have been distributed as part of the proposition. The need is clear. A 2016 study by SANDAG shows that over three-quarters of those booked into jail for drug and property crimes test positive for drugs. Now, people who are arrested and struggling with substance abuse or mental health issues have a better chance at success. Diane Jacob, chair of the County Board of Supervisors, says, "With this grant, we're aiming to further improve public safety and help those who have been on the wrong side of the law become healthy, productive members of the community. The county, city, and community partners will work together to provide services. The project will also support the District Attorney's CARE program, which links individuals with community-based prevention and intervention services. The funding is available starting at the end of June. Community agencies will reach out to offenders appearing in court for misdemeanor offenses and provide not only help with substance abuse treatments, but also help finding housing and jobs." District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis says the aim is to stop the revolving door to jail and provide individuals in our community with the tools they need to help them improve the quality of their life, reducing crime and recidivism, and promoting public safety. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Gene Carpenter.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The 50th Congressional District, which includes much of East County and portions of San Diego, has long been considered a safe seat for Republicans. But now opponents of Duncan D. Hunter are ramping up efforts to draw attention to recent controversies involving the congressman. A billboard will soon be posted along Highway 67. After volunteers from the group Indivisible raised over $7,000 in 5 days on a crowdfunding website. The billboard reads, "Did you know Representative Duncan Hunter is under criminal investigation?" The message refers to a U.S. Justice Department investigation into allegations that Hunter spent campaign money for personal expenses, including a family vacation to Italy, jewelry, video games, and expenses to his child's school, and more. Hunter has denied wrongdoing and contends that the expenses were a series of honest mistakes, but he did take out a loan secured by his home to pay over $62,000 to his campaign. On Friday night, activists gathered outside Hooley's Irish Pub in La Mesa, where Hunter was slated to hold a fundraiser. Protesters held up a giant inflatable chicken to symbolize what they claim is chickening out from answering tough questions on the health care bill, Trump-Russia scandal, and Hunter's recent statement suggesting that journalists might deserve assault under certain conditions. Hunter was a no-show at the Hooley's event, though his aide, Joe Casper, says the event was moved and was held at a different location. It is unclear whether it was moved because of the protest or for other reasons. Some protesters wore bunny ears, drawing attention to $600 paid by Hunter's campaign to fly his son's pet rabbit first class on an airplane. Demonstrators have previously staged protests outside Hunter's El Cajon office and on a bridge over a freeway nearby, holding up signs to draw the attention of motorists before buying space on a billboard for a longer-term message strategy. Finding a company willing to post the billboard proved challenging. Pamela Hughes from Indivisible told East County Magazine that Clear Channel requested the artwork be changed from the original version that stated "Shame on Hunter" and had dollar signs. The group made those changes, but Clear Channel then reportedly refused to run a photo of Hunter without his permission, even though the image is in the public domain, free of any copyright issues. In addition, Clear Channel wanted any reference to the criminal investigation removed. Hughes says, "We are concerned that Clear Channel's political preferences may have impacted its decision to reject our message. We are willing to work within legal guidelines, but must preserve our freedom of speech and the integrity of our message," she adds. Our call to Clear Channel has not been returned. The company has a history of making large donations to Republicans. Hughes said that another vendor, Lamar, agreed to display the billboard with Hunter's photo and slight modifications, but allowed the question about the criminal investigation to remain. Activists are raising funds for additional billboards in Hunter's district. There are 6 Democratic candidates who have declared intent to run against Hunter, and the Democratic Party has indicated it will prioritize funding to support a primary winner, believing Hunter's seat to be vulnerable due to the criminal probe and controversies over his vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act, among other issues. Those issues also resulted in a raucous crowd at a town hall meeting in Ramona held by Hunter earlier this year, with vocal opponents apparently outnumbering his supporters and holding up red cards reading "Disagree" throughout Hunter's presentation, where both supporters and opponents asked questions on important issues. Hunter fills the seat long held by his father, Duncan Hunter Sr., a Marine Corps combat veteran. He has been a strong supporter of increased military spending and the conservative agenda of Republican leaders in Congress, as well as President Donald Trump. He, like his father before him, has won past elections by broad margins. Hunter has also been an early and consistent supporter of Trump during his presidential campaign and has continued to back the administration policies since the election, actions that have bolstered his base among loyal Trump voters, but angered the progressives, as well as some moderate and middle-class voters, who are now staging increasingly visible protest actions in hopes of flipping the 50th congressional district in the 2018 election. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part 2 of the East County Magazine radio show. East County Magazine has won nearly 100 journalism awards with reporting that's making a positive difference in our region. The East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ covers important topics such as fire protection, energy and environmental issues, stories from East County's Native American and Chaldean communities, rural issues, and helping local veterans. Please help keep the East County Magazine show on KNSJ by donating or making a sustaining monthly pledge at www.knsj.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
A measure to create an independent review process for officer-involved shootings in California has been passed by the State Assembly and will next be heard in the State Senate. Assembly Bill 284 by Sacramento Assemblyman Kevin McCarty would empower the California Attorney General's Office Civil Rights Division to appoint a special investigator for controversial cases of concern. Reverend Shane Harris with the San Diego chapter of National Action Network, a civil rights organization, said upon passage of the bill last week, "Today is a big day for our work and commitment to fighting for police accountability in the state of California." He added, It's a big day for families like the Alfred Alango family who lost their loved ones to an officer-involved shooting. The death of Alfred Alango, an African-American man shot by an El Cajon police officer in September 2016, led to days of civil unrest and protest, though District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis found the shooting justified. Alango's family had called for help when he was reportedly suffering a mental health crisis. When officers advanced on him with a taser and a gun, Alango pointed a vaping device at one of the officers, who fired his weapon, killing Alango. Reverend Harris sees Assembly Bill 284 as important to build statewide public trust between law enforcement and the community by providing transparency with investigations of controversial shootings from an independent source. He has stated that California leads the nation in officer-involved shootings and voiced hope that the state Senate will, quote, get us to leading the nation in combating that reality. In 2015, California had 95 fatal officer-involved shootings, the highest in the nation, according to Mapping Police Violence. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is Jordan Damon for Crime Beat Report. California Highway Patrol seeks public help to find two vehicles that struck a San Diego woman on Interstate 8 westbound near the Lake Jennings exit in Lakeside before dawn last Monday morning, then fled the scene. CHP also wants to hear from any witnesses to this serious accident. The victim has undergone multiple surgeries for major injuries, says Officer Kevin Perlstein with the CHP. Those injuries are considered life-threatening, he added. It's a mystery how the 29-year-old woman, a married resident of San Diego's Claremont community, wound up standing on the freeway. The victim had no vehicle and climbed over a wall onto the freeway where she stood facing traffic, arms outstretched, dressed in black, Perlstein said. It's unknown why she was out there, he told East County Magazine in an interview, adding that someone must have dropped her off in the area. It's unknown whether she may have been under the influence of alcohol or drugs. She was transported to Sharp Memorial Hospital. There is no information about the first vehicle that struck the woman, knocking her to the pavement. However, a big rig driver witnessed the second vehicle strike the woman, then flee the scene. The witness described it as a black Ford diesel lifted F-250 or 350 pickup truck, which may have front-end damage. California Highway Patrol also wants to speak with the driver of an off-white Bounder motorhome with a black single-axle trailer carrying a white off-road vehicle. The motorhome is not believed to have been involved in the accident. CHP hopes the driver or passenger may be able to help provide details to help locate one or both of the vehicles that struck the woman. Officer Perlstein believes that any responsible driver should have known that they had hit something. You are required by state law to stop when you hit something. If you don't, it's a hit and run. If the driver had stopped at the scene was sober, they would likely not have faced charges since the accident was not their fault, Perlstein said. If found, the drivers who fled the scene will face felony hit-and-run charges. They could face up to 5 or 6 years in prison. Officer Perlstein hopes that someone may know who the drivers are that fled the scene. Perhaps someone saw a neighbor washing a vehicle or an auto repair shop has suspicions about a vehicle they were asked to repair. If you have any information, please call 619-401-2000.
This is Liz Alpin with an Aztecs baseball report. A San Diego State baseball season that produced 42 victories, a fourth Mountain West Conference tournament title in the last 5 seasons, and an advance to an NCAA regional for the fourth time in 5 years has ended. The Aztecs, the fourth seed in the region, got a 2-run homer from senior Danny Sheehan in the first inning, but fell behind and was unable to complete a late-inning rally, losing to 9th-ranked and region top seed Long Beach State 7-4. The loss ends San Diego State's season on the third day of the Long Beach Regional with a final record of 42-21. Sheehan's 7th homer of the season, a towering shot that easily cleared the left field fence, came on the heels of a Chase Cowboy single to put the Aztecs up 2-0. Remarkably, That was the first extra base hit of the event for the Aztecs, snapping the streak of 26 innings without an extra base hit. We didn't get ahead the first couple games, and it felt good just to get ahead for once and really jump on them early, Sheehan said. Long Beach State used a double, a single, and two hit batsmen to draw even in the second inning. The Dirtbags took the lead for good in the third frame, capitalizing on an uncharacteristic defensive lapse by San Diego State. SDSU, who entered the contest with the 16th highest fielding percentage in the nation, was victimized by three infield errors in the inning. A throwing error at shortstop, a fielding error at third base, and an errant throw at first base on the pickoff attempt did in the Aztecs, who had committed just 50 errors in 62 previous games. We were our own worst enemy today, head coach Mark Martinez said. We are one of the best fielding teams in the country, and it is uncharacteristic of our infield. They have been solid all year long. We couldn't overcome some big mistakes and could not respond from that. David Benuelos singled up the middle, the only hit in the Dirtbags third inning, to score Luke Rasmussen to put Long Beach State up 4-2. Trailing 5-2, San Diego State put together its most sustained offensive production of the regional. Following a leadoff walk, sophomore Dean Navarez singled to put runners on the corners. Junior Tyler Atkinson singled to right, scoring Andrew Martinez, and SDSU was within two. One out later, Alan Trejo singled through the right side of the infield, driving home Navarez, and the Aztecs trailed 5-4 with one out and runners on first and second. However, the rally ended on the strikeout and the runner caught stealing. The Dirtbags tapped on a pair of insurance runs in the ninth to provide the final score. Despite the ending, Mark Martinez took plenty of positives away from a season in which San Diego State doubled its win total from last season and claimed its 27th conference title in program history. I am honored to be a part of this program and coach these young men, Martinez said. It is quite a turnaround for a program that had a bad year last year. It is a testament to our guys committing to a culture and an ideal that we put in front of them. We changed 180 degrees, and the record reflects that. They bought into what we wanted to do.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The Anza Borrego Foundation is looking for volunteers to help count sheep. No, not the kind you count when you go to sleep. The fourth annual Anza Borrego Bighorn Sheep Count is set for June 29th through July 1st. The count helps document populations of endangered peninsular bighorn sheep locally. There are only about 500 bighorn sheep left in the Anza Borrego Desert State Park, and an estimated 900 in the entire peninsular desert bighorn range. It also provides amazing opportunities to view and photograph these elusive desert denizens for volunteers willing to brave triple-digit heat and participate in the annual sheep count. The count is done in summer when it's easiest to find bighorn gathering at waterholes. This year's bighorn sheep count will go on despite the death of the event's longtime leader, Ranger Steve Beer. A letter from Anza Borrego Desert State Park Superintendent Kathy Dice and Sheep Count Coordinator Mark Jorgensen, who are organizing a new sheep counting team, advises, "We were unable to find the master sheep count mailing list. So they're organizing a new sheep counting team. If you would like to participate, or if you know of people who participated in the count in the past, you're asked to please send contact information to ab.sheepcount@parks.ca.gov. That's ab.sheepcount at parks.ca.gov. In addition to volunteer sheep counters, backpackers and four-wheel drive vehicles are also needed to help get volunteers into some remote sites for the count. There is a mandatory orientation on June 17th for all new counters. That's also recommended for past sheep count volunteers. For more information and applications to join this year's Bighorn Sheep Count on June 29th, June 30th, or July 1st, you can visit the Anza Borrego Foundation's webpage at theabf.org. That's theabf.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Defenders of California's national monuments are part of a larger group of public lands advocates converging on Washington, D.C. this week, trying to fend off policymakers who would shrink the monuments. In late April, President Donald Trump issued an executive order to review many of the monuments and favor the smallest area compatible with the proper management. Tom O'Keefe with the Joshua Tree chapter of the International Dark Skies Association is part of the delegation. He says monuments like Mojave Trails and Sand to Snow in the Southern California desert are critical to people's ability to escape light pollution.
If you want to come and see the Milky Way, if you want to see a starry night sky, there's very few places in the southern western United States that you can still experience what's left of our night sky.
And a study by Headwaters Economics quantifies the ways national monuments benefit their local economies. It found, for example, in the 4 years after the Carrizo Plain National Monument was designated in 2001, jobs in the surrounding communities increased by 28%, and real personal income went up by 55%. Economic indicators rose for all 17 monuments in that research. O'Keefe says the Joshua Tree area has prospered as well because, not in spite of, the nearby wild places that preserve the area's allure.
This is our last go-around. If this generation now does not stand and defend these lands, then it will be lost forever. That once you bring in development, light is a requirement, and they will remove our ability to be able to see the cosmos.
The other California sites under federal review include the Greater Sequoia, Cascade Siskiyou, San Gabriel Mountains, and Berryessa Snow Mountain National Monuments. Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Next up from County News Service, we're going to be hearing from Larry Johnson out at the old Campo Stone Store, one of East County's most unique and colorful historical landmarks.
If you're ever on Highway 94, about an hour east of San Diego, you might see this unique building.
Welcome to Historic Campo and the Gaskell Brothers Stone Store Museum.
The Gaskell Brothers built a fortress-like stone store in 1885. Previously, it was a wooden structure, the site of a famous shootout.
A group of bandits had been raiding down the coast of California, so gunfire started. And there was a big shootout. The guy that they had shot on the floor, one of the Gaskell brothers, didn't kill him. He jumped up, grabbed a shotgun, went out and shot people. And so they were shooting dead blank range around. And both Gaskell brothers were wounded. The locals were afraid of another raid. They couldn't get the military up here to guard and protect them. So they thought they needed a substantial building. So that's why they decided to build a building as thick as this and as strong as this. If you take a look around, if you come in, you'll see that the walls down here are about 4 foot thick. It's from stone that was quarried here on site by hand with hammer and drill and no backhoes or heavy lifting objects. It was manpower. It served as a store from 1885 until about 1927.
No longer a store, this building is now a museum, thanks to County Parks and the Mountain Empire Historical Society. Today, the store reflects the early life of the town of Campo.
when the Historical Society began, they tried to make it look a lot like it did in 1899, or when it was a store functioning to serve the local public. So they have gathered some of the food stuff, the tobaccos, the medical supplies, the ropes, the cans, anything that the ranchers needed. If they didn't have it, you didn't need it.
The building is filled with photos, books, artifacts from the Kumeyaay Indians who occupied the region prior to the settlers, and other rare items.
These shackles were found locally about 3 miles from here on a ranch in about 1885. A person who's bought the ranch found in the well the skeleton. On the skeleton, on the legs, were these shackles. They didn't know who the body was or who the skeleton was. It's still a mystery today. One of the interesting things about these shackles is they're blacksmith made. There's no lock to them. Once they were on, they were meant to stay.
Upstairs is an impressive exhibit dedicated to Campo's military history, including Camp Lockett.
Camp Lockett was started before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. I guess the military was anticipating that there was going to be a war, and they needed another base here, and they needed a base in this area because of the railroad, which was a key supply line. We had a long exposed border, and one of the things they were afraid of was that if the Japanese came into the war, they might invade Mexico and come into San Diego. So this was sort of a critical point, and so they started building Camp Lockett.
The 10th Cavalry is one you may have heard of.
The famed Buffalo Soldiers, white officers and an African-American enlisted troops. And they were stationed here, and they were guarding tunnels and railroad and the border. Very tough, very good soldiers.
The museum is open on weekends, making for a nice day trip to learn about our local pioneers.
They were entrepreneurs, every one of them. They were constantly trying to figure out how to make the best of what they had and where they were, and to make a living and to leave history and substantial items behind them so that descendants would have something to live and work on and hopefully try and take care of.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from Caltrans. State Route 78 will be closed for 10 days between Weekend Villa Road to Indian Oak Road, between Escondido and Ramona, starting on Friday, June 9th at 6 a.m. through Monday, June 19th. This closure is necessary so that crews can build a retaining wall to stabilize the slope on the north side of the highway where rock slides recently occurred. Closure is subject to changes based on weather conditions. Caltrans had originally planned the closure in mid-May, but postponed it to avoid impacting traffic for the Ramona Rodeo. Detours will extend from Cloverdale Road, San Pasquale Road area to Main Street and State Route 67 in Ramona, though access for locals will still be available. Expect traffic delays if you are traveling in these areas.
If you're a landlord looking for tenants, San Diego County is offering bonuses of up to $500 if you'll rent to a homeless family, veteran, or other homeless person with a rental assistance subsidy from the Housing Authority. The county needs help to house over 150 people with subsidies, but who are having a hard time finding a home. Todd Henderson, Director of County Housing and Community Development Services, says, "We are offering landlords incentives to make it easier for them to rent to people looking for safe and stable housing. The region's low vacancy rates create substantial barriers for people experiencing homelessness," Henderson added. "Landlords can receive $500 for the first unit that they rent to a person or family with a rental assistance subsidy from the county, and up to $250 for each additional unit leased under the program. A landlord can also receive up to 2 months rent security deposit and or utility assistance, up to $5,000 in damage claim reimbursement, application expenses, and holding fees. A full-time landlord liaison through the county is assigned to make sure everything runs smoothly. Landlords interested in participating in the incentive program should call 211 San Diego. Finding homeless people a stable place to live is part of the county's Live Well San Diego vision for a healthy, safe, and thriving region. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
The Mountain West Board of Directors Tuesday approved the recommendation by the league's men's basketball head coaches to name the conference's top coaching honor after former San Diego State head coach Steve Fisher, who retired in April. The recipient of the award beginning in 2017-2018 will be the Steve Fisher Coach of the Year. Fisher, who guided the Aztecs to a 386-209 record in 18 seasons, led SDSU to a Mountain West record 10 conference titles, 8 NCAA tournaments, and 13 postseason appearances. Along the way, Fisher picked up his second career National Coach of the Year award in 2011 when San Diego State reached the NCAA Sweet 16, finished with a school record 34 victories, and was ranked as high as number 4 nationally. The all-time winningest coach in San Diego State and Mountain West history reached the Sweet 16 once more, this time in 2014 when the Aztecs finished with a 31-5 record. That year's effort, which saw SDSU reach number 5 in the national rankings, was one of 12 seasons with at least 20 wins. Then in 2015, Fisher was the recipient of the John R. Wooden Legends of Coaching Award. The league's decision to name a postseason award after a former San Diego State head coach is not unprecedented. In September of 2014, the Mountain West named its Baseball Player of the Year award after Tony Gwynn, who was the baseball head coach from 2002 to 2014 and lettered in the sport in 1979, 1980, and 1981. Gwynn also earned varsity letters in basketball 4 times and is the school's all-time assist leader. This past season, SDSU baseball shortstop Danny Sheehan was the 2017 Tony Gwynn Co-Player of the Year, marking the first time an Aztec has won the award. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Liz Alper.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a report from El Cajon. Dogs, cats, and other pets awaiting adoption in El Cajon will soon have some spacious new digs. The long-awaited El Cajon Animal Shelter is finally under construction after years of planning and design, with the new shelter expected to open by fall 2018. The new facility on North Marshall Avenue will replace a 50-year-old structure nearby and is twice the size of the older building with room to grow. The new shelter will include housing for animals awaiting adoption, veterinary services for sick and injured shelter pets, grooming, play and exercise areas, pet adoption services, and administrative offices. The building's modern style of architecture will include playful pet images on the exterior. The shelter's estimated $9.3 million cost is funded by Proposition O special revenues, a half-cent sales tax increase that voters approved back in 2004. The special tax ended in 2015. Now, taxpayers are finally seeing the results of those revenues to improve life for pets in the city's animal shelter.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.